This episode brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another version of Bill Roden on Sports. It's the NBA Finals version. We've been gone for we don't count the days, but we're back.
Yes.
I'm here, my undisclosed location, upstate New York, celebrating the NBA Finals. It was good. Glad it's over. Now we can focus on football. Here with my friend and my co-host, holding down in Brooklyn, Jamal Murphy. Murph, what's happening?
A lot going on, Bill. A whole lot of things have gone on since we last spoke. So I guess we'll go rapid fire on this one. We got a lot of topics to cover in a short period of time. So, we'll get to it. But before we start, let me give you guys a word from our sponsors. Bros Pod is, of course, brought to you by BetOnline. BetOnline is your number one source for all your sports betting needs this season, from baseball, golf, soccer, right to all the top fights in UFC and MMA and boxing. Every stat, every matchup, and even live odds and spreads while the games are being played. And when the game's over, head over to our online casino and get in on the game of blackjack or poker or unwind with one of our over 150 slot games. So head to the website today to get in on the action. Use the promo code BELEAV, that's B-L-E-A-V, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet online. The game starts here.
Bet. Doesn't matter. Just bet. You're right. A lot of stuff happening. First off, the great Willie Mays passed.
Yes.
It's funny, man. There's certain people, I guess if you're involved in sports and you see these people are bigger than life and you grow up with them, and there's a part of you think they're going to live forever.
Right.
Willie Mays, Jim Brown, Bill Russell, and these people are so, if you cover them and cover sports and they're these great heroes, you think, man, these guys are going to live forever. Mickey Mantle and Jerry West. And then you see it comes across who they passed away. You say, wow. Willie Mays was 93.
Right.
He was one of the players. He really got me really fascinated with stardom in baseball. I was young. I loved the San Francisco Giants team he played on. This is the San Francisco Giants team when they moved from New York out of San Francisco. I thought that was such a cool team with him and Orlando Cepeda and Juan Marichal with a high kick. Loved that team. I loved Mays, man, and the whole basket catch, which I thought was one of the coolest things in the world, man. You just, you'd almost humiliate somebody. You come and hit this thing, and they just kind of plop like it was nothing,
Right.
And then just the way he played the game. And, he came after Jackie Robinson a few years, and I think that he was like the first wave. Jackie Robinson obviously was the first, but I think Willie Mays and a group that came in were the second wave of black players that came into Major League Baseball and the pros in general. Because remember, the NFL, the NBA just integrated in 1950. And I think what was significant about that second wave, it was Robinson and Larry Doby who came in around the same time. You had to just kind of, they were carrying such a big burden. But I think when Mays and that generation came in, they were freer to exhibit their style. Jackie couldn't really be flashy, you know, he had to just kind of be basic ball. But I think with a guy like Mays coming in young, he was like, you know, when Jackie came in, he was like older. I think Jackie may have been, I don't know, 29, 30 years old. Where Mays came in, he was like 18, 19, 20. So you now had see these guys in their youth, you know, and with this, you know, introducing his whole black style in the Major League Baseball, the way he caught, the way he played, sort of swagger. And he said, wow, we didn't know, you know. So, you know, Mays was just so significant at so many levels, but really he was part of that second wave of black players that introduced style and soul to the mainstream. And, you know, then you have the third wave, people like Bill Russell and that group, you know, and you just keep having these waves. You know, we're talking about waves now where the waves of black athletes, particularly football, basketball, has become a tsunami, you know.
Right.
So, yeah, so, you know, Willie was 93 and, you know, lived a great life. And I'm really happy for all the tributes that he's receiving. There's, you know, they're playing a game. Our Clinton Yates is down there. They're playing a game at Rickwood Field in Birmingham.
Yeah, tonight.
And, yeah, tonight, as a matter of
fact. Soon, about in a couple minutes, probably. I think it starts.
Yeah, so it's all good, man. I mean, I guess the most you could hope for as a human being is to leave a footprint and let people know you were there. And Willie Mays, you know, left a gigantic footprint on the game. So God bless him. And, you know, glad I got a chance to be in his era.
Was he the best baseball player you have ever seen?
Well, I don't really kind of know what that means. I mean, you know what I'm saying? It's like he was clearly the best of his generation.
Mm-hmm.
And probably could have played any generation and been great just the way he played. You know, Barry Bonds was the greatest of his generation.
Right.
You know, so, yeah, so I think in his generation, his era, he was, yeah, I think even Willie May, even Mickey Mantle said, and Mickey Mantle, man, he's the greatest ever, you know.
Right.
So, yeah, clearly I think he's definitely on Mount Rushmore of great baseball players.
What was he like off the field in terms, you know, with all the, you know, in that time? Was he outspoken? You know, was he?
Hell no, he wasn't outspoken now. You know, he was kind of like the Michael Jordan.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you know, I don't know, Henry Aaron, you know, Hank Aaron had some stuff to say, you know, which I kind of agreed with, you know, because Hank, although back then, ain't wasn't nobody that outspoken. Maybe right. Roberto Clemente, because, you know, back then, man, they could definitely put you away.
But, right.
You know, they were putting everybody away, every black man. There were a whole bunch of folks. Remember, this is like 1950 something, man, where they killing black people just for walking on the wrong side of the street.
Right.
And there were marches and all that. But no, but, you know, he was, again, was sort of like more Michael Jordan-ish, where he was just not going to say a lot. And, you know, as long as they don't bother me, although I did sit with him, yeah, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago, I was at some event and I sat with him. And I realized he and I shared a passion for cursing, you know, which I didn't really realize. We sat down and said, man, I said, oh, shit, right. We like to curse,
right.
You know, and we kind of connected around that. And he was talking about those days and what it was like with those MFs not letting him stay in the hotel and him saying, man, shit, we're the ones who hitting the home runs, talking about the black players.
Right.
And he talked about how, and it was funny because he was saying stuff he would probably never say that publicly. He would never talk about how he felt like that publicly, you know. And that was just his thing, you know. But he talked about how, as part of his revenge, there are certain hotels he would never stay in just because they refused service when he was playing. He never forgave them for that.
Right.
And he would just never stay there. So I thought that was fascinating, you know. But it was, I met him a little after the San Francisco Giants won a World Series. I forget which one it was in the modern era. No, 1954, but it was the modern era. That's at the time I was living on Sugar Hill, 4 on Edgecombe. And he came to the school, what my friends happened to be the principal of, and they had an assembly for him. And Willie Mays was there. You know, he was kind of delivering some of the trophy. And he went on the stage in an assembly giving balls out to these middle school kids. and he got to his one last kid, and he had run out of balls. And he said, oh, wow, man, we gave up. Well, I can't let you leave here. And he said, Willie Mays didn't give you anything. So he reached in his pocket, pulled out his big wad, pulled out a $100 bill, and gave it to the kid. Said, I don't want you to Willie Mays didn't give you anything. And the kid was about to faint. He was like,
right.
All the auditorium was like, whoa. He said, now here, you take this. Don't let him say Willie Mays never gave this to you. Now, don't give this to your mother, you know, because you're going to go shop, but this is for you.
Right.
And so the guy said, Harold Reynolds was MC. He said, what do you say? And the kid said, thank you, Willie Mays.
Right. And, the Michael Jordan comparison it sounds right because, you know, I never saw Willie Mays play, but when you hear other people talk about him, it was kind of like, you know, a baseball player they had never seen before. You know, most people say who saw him say he was the best that they had ever seen. He obviously had this like this new style and swagger to him. It does sound like similar to a Michael Jordan.
Yeah, I mean, he was a great player. If you look at the old clips, man, and you know, the stealing the bases, the in the field, you know, he basically redefined what was a extra base hit in the gap.
Right.
You know, there was no such thing. I mean, they used to be a double in the gap, immediately ended that, you know, because of just the speed and all that stuff. And, you know, you talk about 1952, 3-4, and you'd never seen that, you know. And you
right.
say, wow, man, this guy is, like, great. And again, you know, he began his career in the Negro League
right.
in Birmingham. And he was a man of the people, you know. First year where I grew up, where I lived at Edgecombe Avenue, he had an apartment right the next block on St. Nick's Avenue when he first came up. And the kids would come knock on his door, and he would come, he'd be stickball with the kids in the street and, you know, take them to the pharmacy and buy them soda. And then he'd walk down the steps, which is still there. He'd walk down the steps and go to work at the polo grounds. So he was very much a man of people till the Giants took him out of there, you know, and said, no, you can't, you know. And that was kind of the beginning. A lot of black players were like that. They were living in the black community in every place, in Brooklyn, in Chicago. You know, they were all living in the hood with all the other black people who were redlined, because, you know, right. we all redlined because
right. right.
white folks, the banks weren't going to let you, you know, which they kind of still do now, but to a lesser extent, you're still redlining and all that. So all the black celebrities in Chicago, you know, you see great, you know, all the musicians, man, you go to the grocery store and there's Gene Ammons, you know, buying milk. And you just, you know, because that was just the way it was. And although it was messed up because it was segregated, it was great in that we were kind of all in this, we had all this great blackness among one another. You know,
right.
it was like a great neighborhood. Eventually, you know, white folks, you know, all these people moved out, and they moved out, of course, all white neighborhoods and all that. And, you know, what used to be, they used to play in the local clubs. They used to play in these clubs. And it was so powerful because they were playing for black people. And then, of course, they took them out of that and moved them uptown or downtown and all that. So it was good in one way, but it was bad in another way, that we just keep, you know, losing this village, you know. But, yeah, Willie Mays was definitely a man of the people. He was great, and it's great that he's getting all this love. And I think he probably knew. I think even in his life, I think he knew that he was appreciated,
right?
You know, because he was legendary. And not everybody gets to have that feeling. To be right. celebrated while you're on Earth. But I think that he knew that he was celebrated on Earth.
Right. So. We also had the passing of Jerry West and Bill Walton in the past month or so.
Yeah, but Walton was the youngest of all of them.
Mm-hmm.
Jerry West was another one, man. Just great. I think he was much more tortured than Willie Mays. I mean, Willie won... I'm not sure how many world championships, maybe one. I know one, maybe two. I'm not sure how many he won. But Jerry West won one. But, you know, I think he, like, went to the finals seven or eight times and just kept losing to the Boston Celtics.
Right.
And he just talked about it, just how it was, just it just broke him that he just, there was just no joy, man, you know. And I went back and I actually went on YouTube, which is really great. You know, you just call it, I mean, YouTube was great. And I looked at the 1963 finals game when they lost to Boston. And again, you can see these guys, man. You see how good these guys are, you know. But Bill Russell was just, again, Russell was kind of like Mays, you know. And they had, and that team, by 63, the NBA still was not what it obviously would become. But, you know, the Celtics were playing like four blacks, you know. And those guys were excellent. So, the pass of Jerry West. And then, you know, Bill Walton, who probably, you know, the tragedy of his career was just he got hurt.
Right.
He's always injured. And, you know, but it was great. And I always thought with Walton, I think we talked about this on the show last time. You know, this few, every time I run into him, he'd act like he'd known me forever. And I said, man, I don't even know. He said, hey, man, can we take a selfie and all that? But
right,
then
right.
I hear people like, that's who he was. He did that right. to everybody.
Right.
He made everybody feel like they were his best friend, you
right.
know?
Right.
And, you know, that was great. And he seemed to really, unlike West, who I think was just, although West was great even as a front office guy, you know, I think Walton really seemed to live, enjoy life and, you know, didn't really grieve. So, so it was all good. I mean, well, I was distracted by my phone. That means it was all good, but
right.
yeah, Walton lived a great life. You know, hell, Jerry West was 86,
right.
Mays 93, you know, so all you can do is, man, you live a long life and hope that you are remembered kindly.
Right. It's funny because I know we're going to talk about J.J. Redick and the Lakers job in a little bit, but West recently commented on J.J. Redick because remember J.J. Redick had said something about, you know, he was kind of disparaging the players in the 60s and 50s, saying that they were playing against plumbers and firemen and all this kind of stuff. So West, you know, one of his last interviews, he responded to that and said, well, you know, it's funny, you know, JJ is a smart guy, but, you know, I'm trying to rack my brain about what he ever did as a player. Like when, like, you know, he averaged 12 points a game. I'm trying to think, what kind of difference did he make in between winning and losing? And it was, right. So I thought about what he was saying. And basically he was saying that JJ Redick would have been one of the plumbers back then.
<That's right. laughs>
You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's right. He was one of the plumbers. And now he's a head coach of the Los Angeles Lakers.
Right.
Figure that out.
Right.
I guess in a way he's probably grateful that West wasn't there because Jerry would have probably killed him, man. You know,
right?
If he was there, so maybe, you know, it was mercy. That he's not there. But that is true with JJ. And I don't really have anything against JJ Redick. I mean, I was on his podcast once and
That's right. He is a big fan of yours, for sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He used my book as one of his term papers and Duke and all that.
Yep.
So I'm like, hey, man, all right. He's all right with me. In fact, I saw him during the finals. During the Eastern Conference finals. In Indianapolis, and I was waiting for Pascal Siakam, which that never turned out. And he came out and he said, "Hey, man, how you doing?" He gave me a hug, and I wanted, but I didn't really have a chance to. They whisked him into the. He was interviewing Siakam,
right?
And I tried to go in there, and he said, "No. This is just ESPN." I said, "Well, I'm with ESPN." He said, "No, right. You're with ESPN and Skate. You know, you're not TV, but." I wanted to tell him, I said, listen, man, I want, when you get the job with the Lakers, I want you to hire me as a director of Black history.
Right. Which that's a nice position for all teams to have.
Oh, man. I think he would have considered it. I think he may have considered it. Make Roden the director of Black history for these brothers who are ahistorical. You know, you'd rather think everything happened yesterday.
Right.
You know, but I didn't get a chance to throw that out. That would have been, man, that would have been a great gig. I would have been able to announce, listen, you guys, Woj would have reported, Bill Roden is becoming the vice president of Black history for the Los Angeles Lakers.
Maybe it's still possible. You know, we got to reach out to JJ, maybe try to get him on the show, and you can give him your pitch, which you're right. Yeah. I mean, how could you say no to that?
Yeah, really?
If you consider yourself an enlightened person, you know, how could you say no?
Which he is. I think he does. I mean, you use $40 million slaves
That's
for
true.
Your current paper at Duke.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. I think which is wild, right? Because he was like the great white hope of college basketball. You know, so, you know, he's, you know, it probably meant something for other people to hear him talk about your book, you know?
Yeah. I was happily, pleasantly surprised, you know, because you never know impact.
Right.
Like I told you a few about when during the Boston Celtics Golden State finals, I gave Jaylen Brown.
That's right.
He said something, and I wanted to give him a copy of my book. And I didn't want to make a big deal out of it, you know. Although he's, what am I, when you gave it to him in the NBA Finals, you want to make a big deal out of it? But I gave him a copy of the book, and he looked at it. He said, oh, man. He said, wow, you wrote this? And I said, yeah. He said, yeah, my professor assigned this for me to read. And he said, oh, wow. So I signed it to him and all that. And then when he took the book up to the podium with him,
yep.
And one of the reporters asked, what are you reading? And he said, oh, yeah, this is the book I'm reading. So 40 minutes ago, it was by Woj Roden. And I just met him and he just signed it to me. So today was a good day, you know.
Yeah. I remember that. I posted that clip. And that reminds me, I need to, you know, he was the finals MVP. I need to repost that. I'm going to repost it, find that clip and repost it on our social media.
Yeah.
So if
I'd have been a different kind of guy, man, I would have liked, taking that moment, and it would have been all over Instagram. And
you've had a few of those moments, though. You had a friend of mine always brings up when you ran into primetime Deion Sanders, yeah. And then he said, you know, he's like, you know, you're one of the legends. And my friend was telling me he loved that one. Like he was just like how primetime showed you like the utmost respect, you know.
Yeah, and I mean that's better that than somebody to avoid you.
Yeah, much better.
I just wish, you know, like, if I had a different, you know, in a different era, different time, if I was, not to mention certain people, you would basically take those moments and basically be all over social media with it, you know, and like be right. Putting it, you know, like, be, you know, but.
Don't worry, I'll do that for you. I'll do that for you. I'll try to find that clip and get that on there. Yeah. We were talking about Jaylen Brown and the finals MVP, obviously. We haven't talked about the NBA Finals yet, where the Celtics took care of Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving and the Dallas Mavericks in five games. Easier, you know, much easier series than I think most people thought it would be. A lot of people had picked Dallas. You were there. You were in the Eastern Conference Finals. You covered the Eastern Conference Finals.
But I went to Dallas. I mean, I went to Boston for the first two games.
Okay.
And then, I was doing this sort of mini series on Jaylen Brown because I thought that he's a very, I think, a significant guy relative to what we're talking about Willie Mays and all that. He's kind of the opposite of that, that Jaylen Brown, you know, he has a voice and he uses it. You know, he drove a couple years ago he drove from Boston to Atlanta to attend a George Floyd rally, you know, hyping up the crowd. And he's always talking about voting rights, and he speaks up. And I think that this generation of Black players, man, they just really seem complacent, you know. And you look at the money that people are getting, you see why. They say, well, you know, I'm good. And it seems like the pendulum has kind of shifted to more of an individual thing rather than a collective. And I thought Jaylen's significant because he really is about the collective. He really is about using his voice. And so for a guy like that to be the conference MVP, the finals MVP, winning a championship, then he's the kind of guy who, when he says things, will say stuff that has weight and merit rather than, well, I ain't got nothing to say about that, you know, that kind of stuff. I mean, who knows? He may say something powerful about the presidential race, you know.
Hopefully.
Yeah, you know, and what a disaster that would be if the wrong person gets into the White House. So, anyway, to the point. So, yeah, that's why I was going to write this piece, and I spoke to a professor, that same professor who suggested you read my book.
Really?
I spoke to him, and I was writing this piece, and so then it was ready to go. I thought if they were going to wrap it up, in Boston, I mean, you know, so I flew down to Dallas. Because remember, they were up 3-0.
Right.
So, well, I better go down there for game four in case they sweep them. But then I figured, you know, if I go down there, of course they're going to lose. But if I stay, you know, they're going to win. So, of course, I went out there, and they were like, they lost almost 40 points.
Yeah.
So then I was back to Boston for game five, which, and then I was thinking, A, they're winning. I mean, hopefully they win. And then it would be great if he won the MVP to bring it all home. So I was kind of like on pins and needles, probably like he and his mother were, you know. And it was like, because, you know, and of course, Jason Tatum has a game of his life in the finals. So I'm thinking, uh-oh, you know. It's a popular account. If it's based on this one game, they're going to give it to Tatum. So when they said, and the MVP winner is, I was like, really, man? I was literally holding my breath.
Right.
And there was a part of me thinking, it was Jaylen Brown. I was like, oh, man. I think everybody, you know, his mother, you can see his mother, everybody was just like, wow. I was like, damn, really? You know? So, yeah, I thought that was a great moment. So, I've said, you know, like the late Dave Anderson, who was my colleague at the New York Times, he'd always say, perfect. Whenever the angle worked out, he'd say, perfect. So I thought, perfect. And so I wrote that. And then today, I met Jaylen Brown's mother before game five. As you might imagine, I went to the suite and I spoke to his high school coach, Doug Lipscomb, mm-hmm. who coached him in high school, Wheeler High. I talked to his high school coach, and I talked to Quanzo Martin, who recruited him to Cal.
Right.
And so they were both cool, so I wrote them. So they, Doug, introduced me to Jaylen's mom. So I met at the suite. And as you might imagine, you know, just before the game and you up there, she's like, so she was very nice and congenial. But she said, sir, I can't. I mean, you talk to me maybe next week.
Right.
And I was like, well, maybe not next week. I need to get it like later on. But we kind of worked it out. I said, you know, we both said, let's see how tonight turns out.
Right.
So she gave me her number, which is very nice. We exchanged numbers and all that. And, you know, it's kind of a lesson, too, to, you know, the Roden Fellows are in Bristol, Connecticut for the week. And, you know, part of the lesson, they went to a golf match today. I wasn't there. I have my limits. But part of the whole thing, they're going to be meeting people to interview. And you kind of have to know, you know, when to kind of push, when to lay back, no matter what deadline you're on. And out of difference, it was great. We connected. She's very nice. I said, well, let's just see how it plays out. We agreed on that. She gave me a number. And then, you know, they won big. And, you know, I kind of wrote the column I was going to write about Jaylen Brown winning the title. And I wanted to have the last column to be that was probably going to run tonight or the day of the parade about her. Cause I talked to everybody, the professor, the coach, I wanted to talk to her. And so we had a really nice conversation maybe a few hours ago, and she's very excited about the parade and just kind of talked about Jay's upbringing and, you know, how his grandmother, her mother was so important to him. And because he teared up,
mm-hmm.
he teared up on the podium. We started talking about his grandmother, how important she was. So it all works out, man. It all works out. He's an MVP and parade tomorrow. So everybody goes to the beach.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. No, big win. I mean, you know, a lot of people talk about, you know, what a smart and thoughtful guy Jaylen Brown is. Like you mentioned, he, you know, went to Cal Berkeley. you know, I know when he got that big contract last year, he said he was going to, you know, work a lot within the community and put some of that money there. So he's definitely one of those guys that you know, takes his standing in the community seriously.
Yeah. I asked his mom about the money. Mm-hmm. Does he think, because I think with a lot of people, there's temptation for that to be hush money. We get that money, say, hey, I ain't rocking nobody's boat. I'm good. And she said, you know, she doesn't think that's not going to mute him. You know, he still has a commitment. And if anything, it will kind of embolden you, you know, because money is supposed to be power and that's supposed to be like golden handcuffs.
Right.
So, you know, and also I said, well, because, you know, she graduated. She was born in Muskegon, Michigan, and she went to Michigan State. Got an undergrad from Michigan State, and she got an MBA. And her brother is a doctor. Mm-hmm. And, you know, her mother went to Grand Valley State. So, I mean, they've got generations of – so I said, well, do you want him to finish? He said, yeah, you know. He promised us that he was going to go back to Cal to get his degree from Cal. Because, you know, that's the one thing – that's the thing these guys leave. The one thing these institutions value is a degree, you know. So I wonder if Kyrie Irving's gonna go back to Duke and get his make Duke give him his degree. But she said, yeah, he's gonna go back to Cal. And you know, that's the stage she was seeing walk across, that stage. So very sharp. And you kind of see where these guys get their backbone from.
Right.
From the parents and the mother. Cause she's like, she and her mother told, you know, she told them to don't back down, to know your value. To know your worth. And I think when you know your value, know your worth, you become a whole different person. You do stand up for yourself because you know your value. And I think too many of us, you know, because just think about it, man, we've already been beaten over the head for centuries and centuries. You have no value. You have no, you have no worth. And even when you play on these teams, you're made to feel that you're just fortunate. You know,
right, they're giving you something.
Yeah, they're giving you something. Where you're, you know, I look at even when they won the championship, you had all the white guys, you know, the owners, you know, like
they get it first. They get it first.
They get it first. You know, yeah, Jacob. You know, and if it wasn't for these guys, you know, the field hands, you wouldn't be getting no cotton. You would have no cotton to sell. You know, and but so I think it's really important to really know your value. And Jaylen Brown's the kind of guy who knows his value. So I just thought symbolically it was good and important for him to be recognized for the MVP. I remember when he got the MVP of the finals, of the Eastern Conference finals, it was so funny.
Right.
He sat down in front of everybody and once said, Jaylen, you seem like you were really surprised when they announced your name. Yeah, I was surprised. I don't ever win shit, you
right.
know?
Right.
And he actually said something. They had to bleep it out during the presentation of the NBA final thing because Lisa Salter said, Jason, yeah, you something. He said, yeah. And he said, he must have said something like, you know, I don't give a fuck with people. And they had to bleep that out, you know. And then finally then he said, Lisa, sorry for my language. But I mean, get this cat off the stage.
No, but he handled that great too. Even with the Finals MVP, obviously there was this whole thing between you know him and Jason Tatum and who should get it and Tatum needing an MVP to validate what he's done in his career also, right? Besides just winning the championship, you know, the media made this whole thing like, oh, you know, if he doesn't win MVP of the series, then you know something's missing type of thing, but. Jaylen said when he got it, he was like, you know, this is for all of us. So, you know, my brother, Jason Tatum, you know, so he included him, another smart, thoughtful thing to say though, you know?
To me, I don't know how you feel about that. Given individual awards in a team sport.
Yeah. First of all, you know, when people say, you know, like I think, somebody had said, you know, I don't care who gets the MVP. The media, a lot of people in the media were like, oh, that's bullshit. You know, of course you care. First of all, you really shouldn't care. Right. And the only reason they would care is because of the media, because right. the media makes a huge deal over, you know, who's the MVP. You know, they when it's all said and done, they rank you. You know, they count stuff like that. Like, oh, he was Finals MVP. If it weren't for that, people would just be happy to be champions. Trust me.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. I mean, that horse has left the barn. We can never not have an MVP.
Right. But I'm just saying, like, for the media to play both sides, like they act like you're not supposed. You know, you know, it's all about the championship. But then they focus on who the Finals MVP is, right? Yeah, and they cause a rivalry. It's a joke.
Yeah, and we're the media. We're part of it. I mean, we're kind of
I'm not holding Jay.
Who do you think should have been the MVP?
I mean, it was very close to me.
If you had to vote, be honest, Jamal.
Wow, that's tough. I probably would have went Jason Tatum because I would have looked at the full stats and that Tatum averaged more points, rebounds, and assists. But I'm not mad that Jaylen Brown won it because you can make an argument that, you know, in the biggest games, he made the biggest plays. You know, he was if he was not the best, he was just a slight notch behind. But to me, you know, it was another media thing to me. It was like, oh, you know, the narrative was already set. Like, you know, they were already talking about, oh, you know, Jaylen Brown is, you know, the favorite to win the MVP. You know, they were talking about this from game three on. So it's almost like no matter what happened, they were, you know, they had set it up to where they were going to give it to him, but you know, I'm not mad.
Yeah. Yeah. And I remember in the post game, I asked him, cause I was in Indiana when he said, you know, man, I'm surprised. I said, well, if you were surprised about winning the Eastern Conference Championship MVP, how did you feel after getting the Finals MVP? And he was smart and he took the question and he immediately started talking about Tatum.
Right.
And how, you know, I'm speechless, surreal, and I just want to share this with my team. You know, he was sort of mindful. And I guess you have compassion because you know how you would have felt had Jason not won. And so there's a part of me that feels probably psychologically it's probably more important for Jaylen Brown to get the MVP. And maybe Tatum might be better equipped to, like, not win it. You know, because he's going to become the richest cat in the NBA probably in a couple of weeks.
Right. He's gotten all the other awards. You know, he's the first team all NBA guy. Right. All that going kind to the of Olympics. Stuff. Right. Going to the Olympics. So, but I do, you know, it's just a shame because I feel like it's kind of like the vote is almost a shot at Tatum. You know, it's almost like, when Steph Curry didn't win it, right? When they gave it to Iguodala. Even though Steph Curry averaged, you know, he averaged like 20, you know, the most points by far. It's like it's kind of used to take a shot at somebody, you know. Yeah. But
yeah, I thought about it. So you think that there's a resentment of Tatum?
Yeah, I mean, just these narratives that go around. I mean, it was like, oh, Tatum, when, you know, can he get it done? Oh, he's not shooting well. Oh, but then you're saying, you know, he's averaging, you know, the most rebounds he ever has in the playoffs, the most assists he ever has in the playoffs. And they're going to point, oh, he's not, you know, he's not scoring 30 a game. You know, he's scoring 25 a game. Yeah. He's terrible. Like, what, this guy, you know, we don't like, you know, so it's almost like they don't give him the MVP and it's like a shot at him. You know?
Yeah. I think you're right. Now you're making me feel bad,
but Jaylen Brown was great. You know, that's the only thing, you know, like, Jaylen Brown, I think, was just it's that 1A, 1B situation between them. And, you know, I'm not, like I said, I'm happy for Jaylen Brown.
And he definitely picked up the slack. And I think that he probably, I was listening to an interview with Sam Perkins, who said that he thought that the spark plug was a guy like Jaylen Brown, mm-hmm. you know, who will be the first to attack, the first to set the tone. And then remember, he was also playing Luka.
That's the primary defender
on Luka Doncic.
That's where you're right. He probably deserved it because, as I said, he was just a slight notch below in points, rebounds, and assists. But he took on. He was guarding the best player in the series and maybe one of the better players in the league, and did a great job on him. So you're right. I mean, I'm not mad at him getting the MVP.
Yeah, and I was watching the game again last night, just because when you're there, you don't really get to see the whole game. But throughout the series, except for that game four, you know, he basically was picking him up most of the time, fighting through screens, you know, not switching off, and then going around and being aggressive offensively. So he played a great two-way game and had to be shaped. And I think it's funny, I started to hear even the great White Hope Luka was starting to take heat, you know.
Right. It's not a game. You lose. I don't care if it's the finals. You lose. They're gonna jump on somebody.
Oh man!
And they're gonna find reasons to jump on you. And a lot of there's truth to a lot of the reasons. But people they almost make it sound like he wasn't great all year or like you're talking about he's out of shape, which he looks like he could be he could be in better shape. But he did carry the whole team to the finals, and the Celtics were one of the best defensive teams you're ever going to see. Ever. I mean, right. You had so many guys. Like, okay, when they set a screen, when Jaylen Brown was on them, they set a screen. Tatum, Tatum's not a bad defender either. Right. They got Jrue Holiday, one of the best defenders.
Right.
Derek White is one of the best defenders. Yeah. It's like, that's why they won that series so easily, because, it was really two against five or two against six,
right? And so, the other guys just were not coming through. They came through once. In game four at home,
Thing with Kyrie. Kyrie had a terrible series, really, when you think about it. But a lot of it was because Boston had five great defenders on the court.
They were on him, man. You're right. They were one through five, man. They were just tenacious. Yep. So but in terms of Luka being in shape. So I thought somebody said, man, this guy looks like a truck driver, but he plays like Michael Jordan. But when you look at it, he does. He could be like a truck driver. Yeah. But then this cat, I think, is probably one of the greatest offensive players. I mean, this cat, but he had, when you have to work that hard, and they give you the blue. Plus, he's hurt, sure he's banged up, though everybody sure is banged up at this point.
Right.
So, I guess you get to this point, and it depends on what kind of guy. Does he think that he has to get? I'm not sure what him being in better shape would even look like. I mean, if he was in better shape, would they have stretched it to seven games? I don't know. In better shape, the same team, I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah. And I think, give credit to Mazzulla too. They had a great game, or Van Gundy, who was a consultant. Like they had a great game plan defensively, because when you watch those Western Conference finals, and I kept asking myself, when they were beating Minnesota and they're letting Luka, they're converging on him. He's passing to open 3-point shooters. He's creating and scoring. And I said to myself during that series, I would rather them just give him 2-pointers, or just make him hit tough 2-point shots rather than giving him an out every time so he can pass it to the 3-point line. And that's basically what the Celtics did. They forced him into tough 2-point shots and they didn't, they stayed with the other guys. So, right. They had a great game plan and great defenders and they got it done.
Yeah, props to Joe Mazzulla. I think that
35 years old.
Coach to win an NBA title. So, it was just great. Like everything, the planets were all aligned.
Right.
And it was a great series. So last but not least, we killed J.J. Redick. Not killed him, but we talked about J.J. Redick. Hopefully he'll give me a position of
– We didn't kill him. I mentioned the Jerry West thing. I'm sorry.
Okay, but it was said. It wasn't like you were making it up.
Right.
And he said what he said.
Right, that's true. That's
so you got to live with what you say. Like, the guys were beer drinkers and stuff. But now, I think he's going to have a lot of pressure. Them and LeBron, they're going to have a lot of – it's a lot of – the Lakers are showing they'll just fire you. They don't care.
And think about it like this. You were joking about this at the beginning. How are people going to root against – I don't know if this was before either off the air or not. People are going to root against the Lakers harder now. Yes, because the Lakers have haters. And then J.J. Redick was – he's been hated since college. People do love to hate him. Right. So now, people are really going to be rooting against this dude. It's tough. He's now becomes one of the younger coaches in the league. You got the LeBron factor. I wouldn't even want – I was thinking when they were going after Danny Hurley, I wouldn't even want that job because we saw how LeBron treated him. Him. He was changing calls. you know, he's not listening on the bench. You know, he like or Darvin Ham reportedly calls a play and LeBron when they get on the court. No, forget that. We're doing something. He'll do that to any coach.
But will he do it? See, this is the slave mentality comes into this. The white man's ice is colder. Will he show J.J. Redick more respect? And I think, you know, let's see. You know, does LeBron fall into the whole the white man's ice is colder?
The only thing I'll say to that is he's done that to white coaches too. Like he did it to Vogel. He did it to what was the guy in Cleveland? David Blatt.
Yeah. He's an equal opportunity coach.
No question.
Only he didn't do it to. He tried to do it to Eric Spoelstra, and Riley told him, "No, you need to go back to Cleveland.
Right.
Bring your ass back to Cleveland."
Right.
So, but you're right. And then, I guess we could close the show like this. Looking forward, the NBA draft is upcoming. And now the big thing will be, will Bronny, LeBron James' son, be drafted on the first day, on the second day? And who will draft him? Is LeBron going to make Los Angeles draft him?
I mean, I hate this story, man. I hate this story so much. I think I was hoping, you know, I'm a college basketball guy. I was hoping he would go back to college. And because I do think he has talent. I was hoping he'd go back, you know, have a good season in college, and then actually people would believe he deserved to be drafted. Now, looks like he was kind of rushed into the NBA thing, or you know, it could be his decision, right? It could be I always wanted to play in the NBA, and this is what I want to do. But who's gonna take him? The Lakers, and if the Lakers take him, we know it's LeBron. I think he's only working out for either the Lakers or the Suns. I don't understand what's really going on here. His agent. Rich Paul just came out with a statement saying LeBron is off the whole thing about needing to play with him. I mean, first of all, I don't buy that.
I think he just had all this is spin control.
Right.
You know, he's backing off because that's what he should say. But that's how he feels. That's what he wants to happen. You know, and I guess if you just look at it from that vantage point. If you can do it, I mean, if you're how many people, and Rich Paul said, how many times have we seen the CEO and these billionaires hire their son? I mean, Jerry Jones, his son is like, you know, right? I mean, so it's just LeBron is one of the few black people in a position to do the same stuff, you know? So at that level, you say, I guess we've succeeded. I mean, maybe that's progress, you know, but I don't know, man. I think it's going to be kind of fascinating to see if he gets picked day one, day two, and from who, by whom.
I think it's got to be day two. I don't see him going in the first round, but I guess you never know. I mean, people are betting on him being the number one overall pick. Like that's one of the choice things you can bet on.
Bet online.
Yeah. Bet online. Go there and you can bet that Bronny would be the first overall pick. Now, that would be absolutely bonkers. Imagine that would be the craziest thing I've ever seen. And then we'd have to give LeBron credit for that. If he could pull that off. I mean,
who gets the first pick?
The Atlanta Hawks.
With the first pick of the draft, the Atlanta Hawks choose Bronny.
That would be,
would Bron go to the Hawks? Would LeBron sign with the Atlanta Hawks?
Right.
Boy, you talk about a circus in Atlanta. Boy, that would be a hot mess, man.
Yeah, so we'll see. I mean, I hope it all works out for Bronny. I think I do. I'm one of the people, like a lot of people say, like a lot of people out there saying, you know, he has no business, like he has no talent or whatever. I think he's actually has some talent, and you know, he could be a solid role player in the NBA. But I thought the better path to that would be staying in college and actually getting some confidence and you know, showing he could do it on that level, which I thought he could. But you know, like you said, I mean, if you can do it, why not do it? If that's your ultimate goal and there's an avenue for you to go to get there sooner, I guess you just do it.
Yeah. If Giannis could have his brother on the team, you could have your son on the team. You know?
That's true. That's very true. I think he's better than Giannis's brother. I'll say that.
Oh, wow. Okay. All right. Well,
in my opinion,
that's the take. Yeah. All right. Well, I guess on that note, we could close. You know, NFL season is right around the corner, so we'll be coming back talking about the Pittsburgh Steelers and
Before we get out of here, just quick since you brought it up, the Pittsburgh Steelers. Funny thing happened today. I saw today that you know, that we don't know what's going on with Justin Fields and Russell Wilson, who's gonna play. I try not to listen to any of these offseason rumors, because we're all gonna see once the season starts what is really happening. But there's all this stuff. There's rumors going around that Fields is struggling in practice, and then there was a time a few weeks ago that something leaked about some coach saying that they were going to have him return punts and kicks, right? So today, the Madden, you know, the video game, the PlayStation video game, Madden, put their trailer out, and they have him returning kicks for the Pittsburgh Steelers. And that was actually a news story on ESPN today, if that meant anything, right? Oh, so this is what a black quarterback has to deal with. They got him returning kicks on the most popular video game in the world. They got this brother returning kicks. He has to answer these questions now.
Oh, my God. Well, at least they didn't do it to Lamar Jackson. You know?
Oh, my. I would say another thing on NFL thing, Trevor Lawrence just got paid. You saw that? Nobody's talking about that. I don't hear any controversy over Trevor Lawrence getting a big deal, even though he's never won anything, hasn't really had a good season yet. Right. But I think if it was a black quarterback, there would be so much debate around it. But Trevor Lawrence just slides in there, gets some huge contract. And I was telling my friend, I'm like, if Lamar Jackson would have had Trevor Lawrence's first two seasons, he would have been a wide receiver right now.
Exactly. That's right. He'd be returning kicks on Madden. Oh, brother, you can't make this stuff up, man.
Right, but we'll have plenty of time to talk about that NFL stuff in the weeks ahead.
All right, well, for you Boston fans, congratulations. Watch the parade tomorrow. Be careful, be safe. And, you know, drafts is coming up, and we'll see. A lot to talk about. But glad you guys joined us. And today it's officially summer.
Yes, so it's hot. It's hot out there.
Good. I'm happy. The hotter the better. So enjoy it. Keep praying, because don't lose track of the big picture, which is the election.
That's coming.
Don't get distracted.
So, got a big debate coming up in like a week or so. Maybe that's our next podcast after the debate. Yeah, the debate. Even though I'm scared of that one, to tell you the truth.
Yeah. All right, Jamal. Well, listen, man, it was a great show.
Yes.
Everybody have fun. And we'll see you hopefully next week. You know, hopefully next week. And God bless everybody.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.